Here on FM, Book of the Week, and for the last time, we visit Paris in the early 1900s. Another painter emerges from the artistic crowd, and then Pablo Picasso decides to move across town. In Montmartre, by Sue Rowe.
Browsing in Soulier's junk shop in the Rue de Marty one day, Picasso noticed a painting jutting from a pile of canvases. When he pulled it out, he was fascinated by what he saw. In it, a stumpy woman stood before an ornate curtain, holding a sapling by its root. There was a small bird apparently in flight in the background. Picasso liked the painting's primitive mood and composition and thought it a penetrating psychological portrait. He also recognized the artist. The painting was by Henri Rousseau. The douanier. Everyone knew him as a customs official rather than a professional painter, whose work Picasso had first seen in May 1901, probably at the Salon des Indépendants. Soulier let him have this one for a song, 5 francs. It was practically worthless, he said. He might as well have it for the price of the canvas. Henri Rousseau was a familiar figure in the lanes around the Place du Tertre, where, when things were quiet, the shopkeepers sat for their portraits. They paid him in groceries or a bit of hardware, an arrangement with which he was perfectly content, thinking it wonderful that people would give him between 30 and 50 francs for a picture he was happy to sit peacefully working at. Despite Rousseau's evident talent, it was easy to be dismissive of him. Everyone in Montmartre joked about him. Fernand had heard him tell Picasso, "We are the two great painters of the age. You paint in the Egyptian style, I in the modern." She was unconvinced. Poor dear douanier. He was so easily had. So genuine. Rousseau did nothing to dispel his reputation. He was 64 in 1908. On his retirement as a customs official, he had taught himself to paint and produced wondrous primitive scenes. His appeal lay in his ability to evoke a world that seemed primal, even childlike, liberated from convention. After purchasing the portrait of the schoolteacher, Picasso received an invitation to one of Rousseau's evenings at home with friends. In his minuscule studio, Rousseau regularly entertained, and Picasso and Fernand arrived to find the place crowded with people. The grocer, the milkman, the butcher, the baker, their wives and others who stood around looking embarrassed, together with actresses, poets and artists, including Apollinaire, and Braque. At one end of the room, a small stool served as a stage. The chairs would be put in rows, one close behind another, the benches against the walls. The soiree would begin with people singing, then Rousseau would play the violin and follow up with a vaudeville song. Aïe, 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 qui j'ai mal aux dents, miming all the gestures. On the 21st of November 1908, Picasso threw a party for the douanier, which has gone down in history as the culminating banquet of the banquet years that characterized life in Paris before the Great War. As time approached for the guests to arrive, Fernand prepared for the party by producing vast quantities of the Riz à la Valenciennes she had learned to make in Spain. To accompany it, she had ordered ready-made dishes from Potin, a local restaurateur who delivered prepared food in his smart covered van. But her party was already in crisis. Her guests were due, and the dishes she had ordered had still not arrived. Leo and Gertrude Stein and Alice B. Toklas made their way to a nearby café, where they had arranged to meet Alice's friend Harriet, to find Marie Laurencin, already high on Dutch courage, falling in and out of the arms of Apollinaire. Fernand, as Alice recalled it, burst in upon us filled with the tragedy of Félix Potin not having delivered the dinner she had ordered, despite his reputation. Potin's was already closed, so Fernand prepared to scour the district, pick up whatever she could from wherever was still open. They agreed that Leo would help Apollinaire get Marie Laurencin up the hill. Gertrude, Alice and Harriet would follow. By the time they arrived at the Bateau Lavoir, Fernand had managed to find enough dishes to supplement the mountain of rice. She was arranging these on trestle tables, warning everyone not to lean on them and decorating them with ivy leaves. Then Frédé from the Lapin Agile arrived uninvited with Lolo the donkey. They were ushered out by the hostess. In some versions of the story, Marie Laurencin entered the Bateau Lavoir and fell straight into a plate of jam tarts. By now, she was more or less accepted by the male painters as one of the band, though not by Fernand. Gertrude and Leo had just purchased Marie's group portrait, Apollinaire et ses amis, in which she appears with Apollinaire, Picasso and Fernand, an endorsement of her talent and of her place in the band, which could hardly have endeared her to Fernand. When Rousseau arrived, he was shown the seat of honour at the centre of the table. Seated opposite him was his portrait of the Polish schoolteacher, Picasso's purchase, and the reason the party had come about. Picasso opened the proceedings. "Monsieur Rousseau," he announced, "cher grand maître, we are very honoured by your presence." Braque played a little fanfare on his accordion to welcome the honoured guest to his garlanded throne. Rousseau responded in a formidable tone, and the celebrations began. Apollinaire then stood on the table to read his celebratory rhyming poem, A Notre Rousseau. Everyone joined in the chorus. In some versions of the story, Rousseau serenaded the company on his violin. In others, he sat, stupefied, beneath a lighted candle, unaware that it was dripping wax onto his head. It was late by the time everyone retired to André Samon's studio to retrieve their coats. They discovered that Samon, now apparently comatose, had eaten a telegram, a box of matches, and Alice's best hat with the yellow fur trimming, at least according to Alice's version. An open carriage was ordered to take the guests home. Rousseau, Gertrude, Alice and Harriet, with Leo sitting up front with the driver. As they drove down the hill, Samon came running past us with a wild cry and fled ahead of us in the darkness. When Picasso and Fernand contacted Gertrude Stein in September 1909, it was to invite her to their new home at 11 Boulevard de Clichy. Before they left Montmartre, Vollard, the dealer, visited Picasso in the Bateau Lavoir. He bought so many pictures that by the time he had them piled in a cab ready to leave, there was no room for him. Bystanders stood amazed as he climbed up beside the driver for the return journey. Picasso and Fernand were able to furnish the new apartment lavishly. In the Boulevard de Clichy, the apartment reflected Picasso's penchant for bizarre knick-knacks. Fernand complained that, apart from his work, all that seemed to interest him were the mounting piles of masks and ceremonial figures, bronze, pewter, and porcelain ornaments, and his growing collection of bizarre objets trouvés, including a little church organ which emitted a faint scent of incense when the bellows were pumped. The couple sent Gertrude an invitation each. Picasso's included a postscript. "Shukin has bought my picture at Sago's. The portrait with the fan." This was one of Picasso's earliest cubist portraits of Fernand, seated in an armchair. This casual afterthought marked a new phase in Picasso's fortunes. Schuchin's first purchase of a work by Picasso signalled an interest in abstract work, which soon established the Russian dealer as one of the major purchasers of cubist pieces. By September 1909, Picasso's works had been selling so successfully that he could afford to leave the Bateau Lavoir earlier than he did. Perhaps Fernand put pressure on him to move. Or perhaps he realized his opportunities for advancement would be increased away from the ramshackle environment of Haute Montmartre and the Bateau Lavoir. Although the couple had gone only as far as the foot of the hillside, they were now in a different social arena. Gradually, one after another, artists were beginning to leave Montmartre. The artistic centre of Paris began to shift towards Montparnasse. Despite his move to Clichy, Picasso retained both studios in the Bateau Lavoir, as well as a third, which he sometimes used, at the foot of a garden in the Rue Courtauld, where, away from the watchful eye of Fernand, he had been trying out new ideas and new female models. The disparate, fragmented social circles that revolved around Picasso, Diaghilev, and the Steins had begun to overlap. In the arts, connections could now be made between painting, music, writing, couture, and the ballet. Painters and sculptors would in their turn find inspiration in modern dance. Rodin invited Nijinsky to sit for him. Picasso and Braque continued to explore the problems of perspective and the projection of objects on canvas. The art that later came to be thought of as a movement originated in the studios and cafes of Montmartre. In the book she published decades later, Paris, France, 1940, Gertrude Stein declared that modernism could only have ever begun in France. Foreigners would come, go or stay, and through it all, France would remain herself. Which is why so many came to France to live as artists when they could not at home. In France, they lived as they pleased, painting, writing, or dancing, for what the French really respected were art and letters. And that, concludes Stein, is what made Paris and France the natural background of the art and literature of the 20th century.
Stella Gonnet was reading from In Montmartre by Sue Rowe. It was abridged for radio by Catherine Williams, and the series producer was Duncan Minchell. After the news, Sheila McLennan will be here with Woman's Hour, and she's joined by the comedians Susan Kalman and Jill Slocum of Girl Guiding to celebrate 100 years of the Brownies and explore the movement's enduring appeal. Just a Minute returns to BBC Radio 4 on Monday evening, and in this new series, Jonathan Ross joins old hands like Paul Merton, Lisa Tarbuck and Nicholas Parsons.
So, chillaxing, Lisa, 60 seconds starting now.
Thanks very much. I'll take that subject off you tap-slapping me. Tap-slapping. I was trying to learn some patois.
Who from? Like a Chelsea pensioner?
Just a Minute began in 1967 and has spawned junior and television versions. And this series will see the show's 900th edition. The evergreen Just a Minute is back on BBC Radio 4 on Monday evening at 6:30.